This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And talk about, coughing and smoke gets in your eyes. Man, it's bad today.
Well, I'm a little crazy. I looked at the map that the news has put out of the lightning strikes in the last 24 hours. And Mother Nature, I don't know whether she's ticked off or just wanting us to remember that, summers in Oregon aren't all sun and heat.
And I'm sitting here. Yeah, exactly right. The weather has been crazy. The smoke, I can see the haze where I'm at. My eyes are burning right now. Mm-hmm. And then it's been like on one side of the sky, it's like thundering and lightning. On the other side, it's sunny. Everywhere, it's smoky. I'm like, got a tickly throat. I was looking at my fire watch map. Oregon and Washington, I mean, if you zoom out, it's like the whole state's on fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, and unfortunately, you know, watching and seeing, there were over 5,500 lightning strikes in the state of Oregon in the last 24 hours.
What was the news story you sent? It was like between 4:30 and 7:30 a.m.
There was a 50 something in the Portland area, including one. They actually showed it on the news this morning. Hit a power station in Portland. Literally, they have live video of this component burning. And the fire department's pretty much said, we're just going to let it burn out because it's not going to catch anything else. It's in a safe spot. And I'm just going, this is like 1,000 people, I think, in Gladstone or something, were without power because of this. Ooh. But I'm going, and that is the soft end of what lightning can do, especially in a state like Oregon, where we don't take very good care of our forest lands.
And I'm looking at you, Canada, because some of the video I'm seeing coming out of Canada where they're almost, I don't know if you can be worse at forest management than the West Coast states, the Pacific Northwest, the ones that, zhuzh up against the ocean. Inland tends to do a little bit better, but a lot of the stuff coming down. So, I mean, I just really noticed it today. I'm like, where are my eye drops? I need to be like dumping eye stuff in there because it's annoying. But we have to be really, again, fire season.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have
hate
a season.
That we have to deal with that. Yeah. I hate that.
Yeah.
But we're definitely seeing it. Wanted to follow up today. We had a good conversation with Salem Mayor Julie Hoy yesterday. I was seeing a lot of posting about the data center, the Versus mm-hmm. data center going out, seeing a lot of posting. There's a lot of friends and acquaintances that I have differing opinions on this. You said you were kind of checking out some of the social media. I was too. Yeah. There's a change.org. By the way, change.org petitions are just data gatherers. They don't actually do anything. They're just a way to, I guess, get maybe some guy started this one about it, saying stop the development of this data center in Southeast Salem. They don't go anywhere. They don't go to anybody of any power. I don't know. I never signed them. First of all, I never do. But apparently there are 5,200 signatures in the area. And this guy he's kind of laying out why he hates them. And it's kind of the typical talking points we see. And I don't know how, and again, I, maybe we'll catch some flack for this. I don't know how much of this is NIMBY. I think some of it is, and I can't say I blame people because I know I had friends that were living over in sort of Southeast Salem when the Amazon facility went in mm-hmm. and there was a big noise increase, and it kind of, if I was over there, I'd be like, yeah, not in my backyard either. So I get that. The other side of it is, AI is here, whether we like it or not. It is new technology. And you kind of think back to when, the horse and buggy came in and usurped the horse. And, any kind of the time there's a technological advance, there's a lot of people that really hate it and really don't like it until everybody gets used to it and adapts, and then it becomes part of life. So I think this is a little bit of that. Talking about the energy consumption, we talked a little bit yesterday about what a lot of the alternatives are that we really need to be looking at. So I'm really seeing on both sides, there are valid points. I'm leaning on the side of more education, talk to this as a community, lay down some groundwork that this is what you will do, but there is also sort of economic development and things that come along with it. So it's a bit of a complex issue.
It's a very complex issue. And I'm on the fence in a lot of ways. I understand, the importance of it and the need for it. If we don't want data centers being popping up, we have really two options. We either let China take all of our data, because they will happily do that.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to do that, but they're happy to do that. Or we all start going back to store all of your data locally. You know, let's all get our own hard drives and just start storing piles and piles of.
I guess that horseless carriage has left the barn.
Yeah,
we're already way past.
Yeah,
that now.
And literally, I mean, going into my computer, it's like whenever I go to save anything, the first place it wants me to save it is to the cloud, not to the computer. I have to actually manually go in and change it to save it anywhere other than to a data center.
And the bottom line is data centers already exist. Yeah. I mean, we've been using this technology, cloud technology, for a decade.
Yeah.
So it's already there.
So we're not changing that. So now your next scenario is this. The vast majority of these data center stories come from a very few places where maybe the community didn't get involved enough saying this needs to be different. The Virginia scenario where they're talking about all these noises that the data center makes, people are having trouble sleeping. They're having all these issues with that. Okay. So let's look at how we can make that less likely. The water, the electric consumption. There's ways that we can say we expect you to not put a major dent in our water usage by using the recycling filters and things like that, similar to the way a car engine operates. You're not refilling the water in your car every time you get in it. You're allowing that to kind of circulate. It heats and cools and does all the stuff it's supposed to do. So there's ways to get involved and say, we need to know these things are being taken care of. We have the technology, we have the ability. But at the same time, we need the stuff. And I go, here in Oregon, there's already a couple of them. There's communities here in Oregon. There's a massive, Meta one, I believe, out in Prineville. You could, if you want to do the research, let's talk locally to these people that are living by them, working by them, working at them, help construct them, whatever. There's testimonies we can get locally and see what's been done right, what's been done wrong, and let's make it work.
Yeah, I was down in Salt Lake City, 2013, when there was that big controversy about that big data center that was down in there in the Salt Lake City area. It was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I'm reading through this change.org thing again, though, and there's a couple of, you know, I'm seeing what he's saying, and a lot of this seems a little boilerplate. But whenever I see, please sign this petition to stop the development of the Versus Data Center for a greener, more sustainable Salem. As soon as I see the word sustainable, my spidey senses go up. This is a global warming, climate change person. This is that. So the word sustainable is always a red flag for me. So I don't know who's behind this. And we were kind of talking about who's behind the protests. You were saying you were seeing a lot of people wanting to get together and protest these things and go out there. And what we've seen with protests for any, pick your issue, plop in your issue of the day. Usually it is with minimal information, maximum emotion, maximum fear, people being out there. You know, you talked about the Walmart in Bend yesterday. Mm-hmm. We've talked about other things where you've got people out there. Amazon in, the Bronx, where AOC and she came in. So all of these things, you've got all this righteous, sort of not very well-informed anger of people going out there and trying to stop things. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, that actually wasn't really great for the community to drive this out.
Yeah.
So I would like to see less of that and more of informed conversation and actual dialogue and data. Can we have a little data every now and again?
I think it was the Walmart conversation like you, me, and Julie had right after we went off the air, because when I was living over in Central Oregon, Walmart wanted to build a super center kind of at the north end of town. There had been a new super center built in Redmond, Oregon, where a lot of people were driving from Bend and Redmond to go to that store. So Walmart had purchased the land, everything else. It was working on the permits and this and that. And a small group of people got out every day to protest a Walmart coming there saying it's going to cause traffic, it's going to do all of these things. And Walmart finally gave in and backed out of that. They sold the property to Costco, so now there is a Costco in that spot. And I'm going, you're bringing in the traffic and the congestion and all these other things you said you didn't want from Walmart, but you were okay with it from Costco. So I'm kind of going, we make your own judgments on that. We all can.
Sure, I have an opinion.
Yeah, of the clientele that you're willing to accept it near your community versus not. Okay, we can debate that one later.
But is kind of bogus, because it's about the same people that shop at both places.
Yeah. Well, and then you have the noise issues, and construction is noisy, and digging out
traffic.
And I kind of go, yes and no. There's ways they're not doing construction overnight for the most part. you know, road work can happen overnight because it makes it more convenient for traveling during the day. But a lot of building construction is happening during the day. Most of the noises are during the day when people are either not home or at least awake. But there's other things. And I go up along the freeway and look, anywhere there's building along the freeway, there's big concrete walls to be sound barriers.
Yeah.
You know, society has created scenarios. I remember years ago, we were talking about renting a place actually in Central Oregon, but it was close to the train tracks and don't want to live by the train tracks. There's too much noise. And I'm sitting here kind of going, here I am 20 years later. I still hear the train blow and I'm nowhere near a train track.
Yeah. Just depends on the topography and, you know, the prevailing winds. Yeah. So again, more dialogue I think is better. Again, my thing with change.org, don't bother with it, but whatever, you do you. Okay. Let's go ahead and take a break. I want to come back. There's an article that was coming out of PJ Media from our friend Victoria Taft. I thought this was funny. We'll have a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour when on the second side, we're going to talk with Phil Kirpin and we're going to talk about inflation reduction under Biden. Sure. So you are listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Okay, real quick, listener texting in as far as other options, you know, having data-driven conversations. Alternates would be using chillers. They do use additional electricity, but you could use a cooling tower, which uses water through evaporation to recirculate the water. I mean, it uses, so again, hey, that's data.
Well,
that's some like solid plans that you could maybe like chat about and research.
Well, you're talking about a location in town where if you were to build a massive building, you know, we love our solar panels. We might as well cover the lid because there isn't going to be a whole lot of shadowing from nature.
It seems rather like a perfect little marriage.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they won't, you know, they're in Oregon, so they won't get sun 365 days a year, but...
You have to compromise. Again, interesting options to consider. Okay, I saw this headline. I love this. Again, this is from Victoria Taft. I don't know if she's in Oregon anymore, but a lot of you guys may be familiar with her. She's been a longtime journalist, blogger, media person. Her headline today, PJ Media, or maybe yesterday, Portland's Adopt-A-Bum program isn't working out as well as the mayor hoped. This was basically, there was a financial incentive. You got an extra room here. We rent that out for like $200 for some, you know, for this friendly homeless person. Mm-hmm. And we'll give you like $1,000 and that'll go a long way towards helping the homeless. You just invite these people in. What could go wrong? Well, I don't know that anything went wrong, but only 5 homeowners went. That sounds like a great idea.
I remember talking about this. I think it might've been up to 6 months ago is when the mayor proposed this.
Yeah.
And virtually, so what it is if you rent a room to a homeless person for $200 a week, so you would get $800 in a typical month out of this homeless person, then I think they would subsidize it up to $1,000. So now you're renting a room for $1,000 and you don't have to choose that $200. You could be really generous and do it for $50, you know? But I just sit here and go, at the time we talked about it, I go, yeah, this is never going to work. No one in their right mind is going to just go out on the random streets and say, hey, you want to come live with me? 5 people did, so I'm a little shocked at that high of a number. But at the same time, I'm going, it could very well be that maybe these are families that have a relative that's been living on the streets. And
they're
find
already couch surfing.
Well, you find a way to kind of make a little money in that scenario. I can see that. So maybe that's where the 5 came from. I don't know. But I'm not shocked it hasn't worked at a massive scale in Portland.
No. Again, what was the vetting? Do we know anything that goes? And on all these things, they start out with sort of a germ of, well, that's an interesting idea. And again, watch Dr. Zhivago. That's what this is. That's a really nice big house you got there. You got all this room. It starts with, here, we'll offer you this to do it. Grand idea. Eventually it'll be, well, you will do this. We'll still give you this money, but you're going to do that. And then finally it works out too. Yeah, we're not doing any of that. You're taking these people in because we're telling you to do it, which is nudge, shove, shoot. And that's how that always works out. It reminds me of a book I just read too. It's called A Better Life by Lionel Shriver, who is a great, she's a great author. Lionel, yes, she. And it talks about this like a program in the Bronx in New York. And it was called, it had some sweet, lovely, euphemistically wonderful sounding name, and she invited this individual in. You need to read that story because there really is no agenda to it. It just says, hey, let's play this all the way out to its logical conclusion. Sorry, the smoke is in my eyes.
Conclusion.
To its
confusion.
Logical conclusion. It's a really good read. It's a chilling read. It'll piss you off. And that's exactly what this is. And so right now, only 5 people took advantage of it. It's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it's going to come to other cities in Oregon as well.
It'll probably come back. They'll probably offer a little more financial incentive, guaranteed money to do this for the second round. My first thing reading this article was, at what point do they finally just say, well, you're going to take in people. We need to get these people off the streets. You have a room. We're going to fill it for you.
Yeah, because right now sort of the MO is, you know, like with FIFA or with Iron Man. I don't know what's happening in Salem, but a lot of metropolitan blue run cities will just move them out of the way. They'll just put the people over here. And again, none of this is compassionate. None of this is actually solving any problem. And now it's going to start kind of, you know, right now it's just sort of a gentle nudge. Here's the incentive. Pretty soon it's going to be more of a, you got your arm behind your back and you're being strongly encouraged to do this because we have a real problem. You want to be part of the solution, don't you? Don't you care?
Well,
where have we seen all that before?
God, it's recent memory. It's like within the last 5, maybe 6 years, you know, that suggested.
Clavod, COVID.
Know, you should take the shot because it's the best thing for you to do.
Don't it'll, you care it'll, about grandma?
And well, it didn't start with don't you care about grandma. It started with you should take the shot for your, you know, your own health and your own family. And then it became you're going to kill grandma. Then it became you're not going to be allowed to work or you're not going to be allowed out in polite society if you're not willing to do what we tell you to do.
So we've seen this playbook before. And frankly, if you are not connecting the dots here, I don't know what to tell you if you're not connecting the dots here. Because, I mean, it could just plug in any issue.
Well, they
plug in any issue at all.
They tried the jab with, you know, the same kind of motivation. We'll give you a free burger or a free donut. Or some government agency said, we'll give you a pay bonus if you get the jab.
Oh, here's $1,000. You know, you can earn up to 5, you know, here, we'll just jab you every couple of months, but here's money. And tons of people took advantage of that. This should give you pause. And again, go read the book, A Better Life. Go watch Dr. Zhivago because this is, and again, none of this is anything new. This is as old, there's nothing new under the sun. It just happens all the time. Again, this is Oregon Home Share. You know, if you want to invite somebody into your home and it is your own decision to do that and you do all the checking and everything else, but having a government program, then they're probably saying, we've vetted everybody. Background, like what? Graham Plattner, is that how you vetted him?
I go back just a couple of days because we were having that conversation with Amy about doing those kind of out-of-the-box thinking in order to afford those first-time homes. Things like if it's just a couple of you, you have a 3-bedroom, maybe you rent out that room. Would Portland be willing to, you know, hand over an extra $1,000 if I'm renting my room to somebody that actually applied for it? Or do I have to pick somebody off the streets?
See, you're asking way too many questions. Way too many questions. But I think that just kind of goes to the heart of a lot of these blue run cities don't really have any solutions at all.
Mm-mm.
None that will do any work. And they certainly don't want to actually look at the problem for what it actually really is. That's why I think a lot of people resonated with Spencer Pratt's campaign talking about Skid Row and homelessness issues and drug addiction and crime in LA. And that's why it resonated. Everybody with eyes to see knows exactly what the problem is here. And it's not a housing shortage.
I just sit and when you listen to some of these people that are out supposedly helping the homeless crisis, that are getting a ton of government money, and they use harm reduction as a tangible description.
There's another euphemism for you.
I just sit here and go, we need harm reduction. We're out doing harm reduction. It's what harm are you reducing by handing people the equivalency of everything they need except the drugs to do the drugs?
Didn't they couch that as like AIDS and bloodborne illness? Is that how it started?
To hand out to the needle exchange. Yes, it was about illnesses because of multiple use of needles. And where you can say, okay, I understand that one. Handing out packages of tinfoil, plastic bags, pipes, all of that. I'm going, you're not spreading disease through tinfoil.
And that And that is like every other one of these sort of social engineering programs. They start out with sort of a kernel of something that's like, oh, yeah, OK. And they always metastasize and morph into some behemoth because you've got government, you've got people with fiduciary goals in here. They're not interested in solving the problem because the money dries up if you do that.
And I look at a program like Adopt-A-Bum and you go, wait a second. So you have all of this federal, this money coming in from taxpayers and you want me to bring someone into my house off of the streets.
Well, yeah, but you're going to get $1,000 and you're going to feel good about yourself.
That's nothing compared to the multi-millions the homeless industrial complex rakes in.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's those just in the first half of the show. Those are two instances of everything running off of fear, running off of emotion, running off of just enough information to kind of like skew how people are going to see it. And then that narrative gets set and we're off to the races.
Well, so much of it is playing to emotion. And I think that may be the biggest underlier in what we're going through right now. Is media, government leadership has mastered emotional manipulation. And by working as a tandem where this is the messaging you get, this is the fear we're going to instill in you, society needs to get back to a more logic base and actually play out what these emotional decisions do for us in the long term. Because that's where I always come down with the biggest challenge. Is we react on emotion and we buy it later because now we're stuck.
And we're always going to find out what the outcomes are regardless. So, all right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the news. We'll be back with Phil Kirpin on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this kind of smoky day where everybody is. I think it's Pretty bad. Although I don't know, our next guest is having to deal with that. Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment, is joining us on the phone. Phil, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Good, good. I mean, where you're at, I mean, are you dealing with any smoke from Canadian fires coming down?
No, I think we're outside of the smoke range, but we are dealing with 102 degrees. So it's kind of like, just from the heat and humidity, it's kind of like walking through soup outside, but no smoke.
Yeah, no, I don't miss that. I grew up in New England and in Jersey area. I do not miss that. And walking through soup is very apt. Oh my gosh. So yeah, we're all dealing. We got our own challenges here. So Phil, we've got you on today. Coming back up with some Biden stuff. And I was reading all the stuff. It's like, oh, we're still dealing with the Biden blunders. But talk to us today about there's some stuff that's still on the books, and it's talking about price controls for pharmaceuticals and things like that. So the stuff that happened in the Biden administration, we're still living with that.
Yeah, you know, they remember they called the Inflation Reduction Act, and then it sent inflation through the roof. I love it. It's the best name for a bill since the Affordable Care Act, I think. Very, sort of up is down kind of thing. But, you know, the way that the Biden people claimed they were going to lower drug prices, they basically just said, look, we'll have the secretary pick, Secretary of HHS pick 10 drugs a year. And we'll quote unquote negotiate them, but you know, basically we'll set the price because if the company doesn't agree, we'll tax them 95% total product sales over the past year. So essentially they'll be out of business. So they'll have to take our price. And you know, they came up with a bunch of formulas and rules and so forth on how they would come up with the price they set. And the bottom line is they came up with a process that is so disconnected from any real measure of value and any real pricing metrics from the marketplace, that they essentially chop out from under the companies that develop drugs a lot of the return on that investment if they get selected as one of the 10 drugs that are subject to this price setting process. Mm-hmm. And so what that might sound good, because you say, oh good, all these drugs are going to be much cheaper, and it's like, well, okay, but that's kind of the wrong way to make drugs cheaper. The right way is we want more drugs developed, we want more competition, and we know eventually they'll get to generic status and the price will plunge, and we're all better off for it. You try to sort of short-circuit that and just have government set the prices, and what happens is, what we've seen is lots of clinical trials have been canceled. I think almost 100 clinical trials have been canceled now, because you mess with the whole math of how that industry works, which is, you know, we're going to fund tons and tons of trials, try to figure out, you know, what works, because you're always searching for that blockbuster drug, that massive, you know, breakthrough cancer drug or Alzheimer's drug or whatever it is. And then that blockbuster drug, you know, let's say you get, you know, one of the huge breakthrough, you know, drugs for diabetes or high blood pressure, whatever, something that just everyone uses. Well, that's going to pay for all of those ones that didn't work out, and the return on capital and a return for your investors and so forth. But now you've got this new sort of thing to consider. You know, I want to be successful, but I don't want to be in the top 10 most successful drugs, because then the government will come in and set an arbitrary price and I won't be able to make any of my money back. And so it really messes with penciling out a lot of these clinical trials. And particularly what we've seen is the small molecule drugs, those trials have been canceled. Those are basically pills. Those trials have been canceled because now the government has basically told these companies, you'll get 4 years longer to be safe from this government price-setting mechanism if you do injection drugs than if you do pills. And so the geniuses in the Biden administration and in the Congress who did the Inflation Reduction Act decided, you know, new drug development should be all injections and not pills. So you know, we've got a lot of these kind of perverse impacts. That's my daughter you're riding the car shipping in. I don't know why. this is the situation we've got. Making it even worse, we've got a lot of Biden carryover staff that are still at the Department of Health and Human Services, and they're implementing a lot of these, a lot of this so-called price negotiation in a way that is much more destructive than it even should be, because they're inventing methods of coming up with pricing and, you know, using inappropriate reference prices and things like that that actually make these price controls more draconian than they otherwise would be, and that is causing more of these clinical trials to be canceled. So, yeah, I don't know if there's much appetite, unfortunately, in my judgment, for Congress to revisit this. We tried very hard last year to at least get them to get rid of this disparity between the way that pills and injection drugs are treated, because I think it's so crazy that we're basically punishing the development of pills in favor of injection drugs. But, you know, even if we can't get the law revisited right now, Trump should at least fix the more destructive than they need to be interpretations coming out of the Biden administration, and get rid of these Biden carryover personnel, so many of whom are still there. So that's what we argue in this article that you asked me to come on and talk about.
Yeah, because it seems that we're kind of cleaning house and getting rid of all these people, you know, and reading through what you wrote. And Mehmet Oz is in charge of all this now. And so
I would say he's done a very, very good job of focusing on what probably should be his number one job, which is the fraud crackdown that he's leading. And they've got an unbelievable number of fraudulent providers and barred them. And they have a huge additional way to go on that. But I would like to see him work a little bit more on some of these policy issues, you know, like undoing some of these Biden things on drug pricing policies. And also, the other thing that I'd really like to see him do more on is crackdown on the hospitals that are violating the price transparency order from Trump, because we've still got probably the majority of hospitals in this country, they're just blatantly not posting their prices, even though that's required currently. And so, you know, I'm a fan of Dr. Oz. He's got a huge left, a lot of different things to do, but there are definitely some areas where he could do more. And I think one of them is, you know, clearing out the Biden personnel that are in charge of this drug negotiation program.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time I was at the doctor. I don't even think I saw prices on anything. It's just kind of like you get whatever you're at. To me, I mean, you got this is clearly, again, government meddling in the free market, and to the detriment of, you know, the very people that they're saying, well, this is going to, you know, we're going to lower drug prices on this end. But then you're keeping a lot of potential cures and great medicine off the market on the other end, because the ROI is just not there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about drugs, you know, the drug companies, people have lots of reason to hate them, so I'm not going to try to change their mind, particularly after COVID and everything else. But drugs, I think, are, in a way, they're sort of the most amazing part of healthcare, maybe even the most amazing part of our whole economy, in the sense that they're the only thing that you know is eventually going to get super cheap, because you know, there's 20-year patent life. usually by the time a drug gets to market, half of it's expired. They got about 10 years to charge these astronomical prices, but then it plunges to almost nothing, essentially, because you get a generic and, you know, $10 for a generic or whatever it is. So the more we can get the incentives right to develop new cures, it's not just that we, you know, actually will, you know, extend our lives and have, you know, cure diseases, improve our conditions, so forth, but we're doing it in a way that in the long term is actually going to save us a ton of money. Because if you can get a drug which you know is eventually going to be generic and it replaces hospitalization, it replaces some medical procedure or something else like that, you know, eventually it's going to get very cheap, unlike those other things. And so that's a really good thing. It's something you don't want to accidentally disincentivize by imposing inappropriate price controls, you know, during that limited window that they have to make that their, you know, their investment.
So is what I guess the very least we can expect since it's still on the books that they don't expand it anymore and maybe try to nibble around the edges and, you know, getting rid of some of the policies some of these people.
Look, President Trump is not going to say, hey, we're not doing price negotiation anymore.
Right.
Because he likes the idea of doing price negotiation. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily share my misgivings about, you know, interfering in the market. He's a big on, you know, I'm going to get the price down any way I can, period.
Right.
I probably like 90% of his policies. I probably don't like the 10% that are the most heavy-handed in terms of price setting. But I do think that, you know, there's a way to do it where you actually use, you know, appropriate comparators. You do the math correctly, and it would be much less destructive than we saw with this Biden personnel. And you can do it, you know, you can make sure that you're not causing, you know, dozens of clinical trials to be canceled. And I think that's the most important thing.
That's really concerning. What I wanted to get your thought, wasn't it Trump RX? Didn't that just come out recently? A website where you supposedly could get.
I love this. You know, one of the things the Trump administration has done on drug pricing is they said, look, you can get a cash price. You can buy directly from the manufacturer. You can buy from Trump RX. You can buy from private market sites like GoodRx or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You don't have to just be locked into your insurance company. If you can get a better price a different way, go ahead and do it. And for most plans, people in the commercial market, you can then submit. You can submit a claim and you can get credit against your deductible and you're out of pocket. Now, one thing I would like to see is, there ought to be a requirement that if you pay cash, not just for drugs, but for any medical service, that it counts against your out-of-pocket and your deductible. And you know, I would like to see that in the government programs as well, like in Medicare Part D. And I think, you know, the best way to deal with this, we've had this huge fight in Washington over this whole issue of the PBMs, which are the pharmacy benefit managers, which are now owned by the insurance companies. And they've spent all this money saying, oh, we actually save you money because we're so good at negotiating prices. And then you've got, you know, the drug companies themselves and a lot of consumer groups and others, they say, no, they're diverting money to profits. They're making it more expensive. And we've had all these lobbying battles, these TV commercials. You've probably seen a million TV commercials about PBMs are great or PBMs are terrible and all this back and forth. And what I like about this Trump approach of direct-to-consumer sales is, you know, I don't have to believe either side's lobbyists, right? Let's have both models compete. Let's have the PBM channel. Let's have a cash channel. Let's have direct-to-consumer sales. Let people choose whatever works for them. Let the market sort that out. And so I think that's been a really, really good positive we've had on drug price this administration. They've promoted those direct-to-consumer sales.
Yeah, I mean, just on a personal note, I've actually been looking into that. I don't take a whole lot, but I, you know, there's one or two, and you know, as you get older, and older people need more. Just looking at all the options out there. So I was actually happy to see that. I love the idea of having it go against your insurance deductible.
I don't know if you know about this, but a lot of times the pharmacy is not allowed to tell you if they could sell it to you for cash than for your insurance price, because their insurance contracts require them not to tell you unless you ask. But I've noticed sometimes, you know, like sometimes I'll pick up a generic and they say, oh, it's some huge price. They say, oh, it's $80. And I say, oh, really? What would it be if you run it as cash? And they're like, oh, it's $20. I say, okay, do it that way. So, you know, sometimes if you just ask, hey, what would your cash price be? You can actually save money. And the thing is, you should feel good, not bad about that if you go to an independent pharmacy, because they usually make more money on your cash transaction at a lower amount than they would on the insurance transaction, because when you pay them on an insurance transaction, the insurance company claws back most of that money from them. They don't get to keep it. So they'd actually usually do better on the cash transaction.
Uh-huh. Very good to know. I will do that the next time I do that. Oh, gosh.
It never hurts to ask. That's my flaw. My wife doesn't like it. She thinks it makes me look cheap, but, you know, what do I get there?
My mother was born and raised in New York City. She would kill me if I did not ask. The worst they can do is say no.
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment, AmericanCommitment.org. Always great to talk to you, Phil. Go out and enjoy the day. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
Okay. All right. Take care. All right. We're going to take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
Okay, always an interesting conversation with Phil. I thought part of it, one of the interesting things was talking about the injectables versus the pills.
Yeah, and that got my brain going. I was a little quiet that last segment because my brain was clicking along, especially once he said that. And I realized that what did the Biden administration learn through COVID? You inject enough fear into society, they will walk into a pharmacy, lift an arm and get a shot. And once that shot is injected, there is no turning around. There's right. No going back. Anyone that has taken pills, maybe it's something even as simple as ibuprofen. If you don't like the way it makes you feel after a couple of pills, you're going to stop taking it. So I kind of sit there and think, was that intentional in that if they throw something new to market, they create a reason for people to get it. You get the shot, no turning around.
Why you think they're being recalcitrant now about, the pill form, well.
Pills allow too much power to the consumer to say, I took it a couple of times, didn't really make me feel better, or my stomach hurt, or, it caused other issues, and stop taking it on their own. You can't let the general public make their own decisions on healthcare. You need to give them the shot and make them have it.
I think you make a very, very interesting point there. And whether that was intentional or they just like, a happy accident. Could you look at the weight loss drugs too? It's all about injectables for Wegovy and everything else. And it's been rough. A lot of people just want a pill. They don't want to stick a needle in themselves. And it's been hard, maybe for a little bit different reasons. But again, I think it always does come down to control.
I am very anti shots. I am not a fan of shots. I've had some issues with shots in the past. So if you can give me a pill rather than a shot, I will take that any day of the week.
I'm right there with you. I don't know that anybody likes shots. I know with like blood draws, I've gotten kind of used to it now. And if you have a good phlebotomist, you don't even really feel it. But getting a shot, either in your butt or your arm, that hurts. So, I'm not a big fan of shots either. But that's an interesting point, Hunter. I'm going to ponder that. Mm-hmm. Do a little more research on that.
Maybe I was a little too tinfoil hatted during that segment. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. Be interesting to hear what you guys think. I don't know. I think that's an interesting point. Let us know. Yeah. Newsmakers at 1430 KYKN. Drop us a line. Because I'd be curious to see what other people think about that. Another story that based out of Oregon that has been going viral. I was watching some podcasts last night and saw this news story out of Portland again. Bystanders stop naked man from trying to kidnap a 7-year-old girl at the waterfront park. And this one is going viral for the very reason that 12 people called 911. And I think it was 25 to 30 minutes before anybody showed up. And again, you had a naked guy going around basically telling people he was Jesus, if I'm remembering this right from the story. Mm-hmm. And then actually tried to grab, and this was, these people were visiting, so welcome to Portland. And they tried to grab the girl, the 7-year-old girl, from Michigan. And it finally took the bystanders and the family to pepper spray the dude. And then he ended up in the river and he was finally apprehended. the story here really is it took that long for, number one, people to reach, because I think they had to wait before they were even connected to 911. Then when they were, the response time from the cops was so long, they were triaged and not necessarily deemed super high priority.
Yeah. Well, I will go with one little thing that is missing from this story is that, did you know that Oregon is one of the very few places in the country that public nudity is not a crime? So let's start
with that. Is anybody surprised by that?
No one's surprised, but let's start with that. And if you actually listen to them describe what indecent exposure would be in this state, it is a pretty tough standard to prove. You have to literally prove that the perpetrator is doing it for their own sexual satisfaction.
Well, with men, it's a little easier to tell.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with this. So there was 12 phone calls. What if the first 9 of them were just to report a naked man acting erratic?
Yeah.
Okay. The other part of it is there was another event happening not too far from this location. It was a standoff. But when your police force is so light that your whole force is at one standoff, you have the ability for all these things to occur. Whether it's this, whether it's other shootings, whether it's this and that, I don't even know. But it's a little concerning when you have all of your police force in one location and this guy is allowed to run around naked, act erratic, and then grab a 7-year-old girl.
Yeah, that's interesting because, yeah, probably the first couple of calls were probably about a naked guy. And then there was a Portland Police Bureau press conference yesterday where they just flat out admitted, well, the police have been defunded. We don't have the funds. We don't have the manpower, telling everybody this. And the bottom line is, if you're in trouble, unless you're actively being assaulted, murdered, whatever, we're not coming. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to take a bit. So this, again, and I've said this, and this started under Carter, first responders. No. I'm a first responder. You're a first responder. The people that were making those 911 phone calls and the parents of this girl, they're the first responders. So the fact that they stepped up and took care of this is a natural thing to do. It's being they're trying to breed that out of people where you just stand back, just film it for evidence. Let it play out. I mean, I was glad these people stepped up and took action.
Yes, I'm a little saddened that it took him actually trying to grab a 7-year-old girl for that action to occur. I'm going to bring this a little bit local because a couple of stories we have seen locally here in the Salem-Kaiser area in the last few months where women having a bad gut feeling about someone watching children at a park chastised and demonized when they make that information public. And by chastising, demonizing, making people shut their mouths, this is the kind of scenario you end up with in the long term.
It is. And you're seeing pushback even in Europe. And I know we're just about out of time, but a lot of times the men will take action. And sometimes the wives get in there and try to stop it. Let the men be the men, please. They're doing what it naturally comes to men. It's not toxic. It's men protecting their families. It's men protecting women and children. And so this is what actually happened up there. And you're your own first responder. You know, look at the militia is just made up of people who are there to protect their communities and other people. So I push back against that.
Yeah. I mean, I had to make a similar phone call to these 12 yesterday. Not too far from the station here, there was a person acting erratic. Pants were a little below the rear end on this person. I got to see a nice tan line. And, you know, I called non-emergency because that's what I do. I knew if the scenario went worse, I'm there. I can deal with what I need to deal with. There wasn't any women and children present that I needed to protect at that point. But at the same time, I kept an eye. I called 9 emergency. Kaiser PD came and eventually took the person away. But I'm going, it is something growing in society, and we need to be proactive in nipping it in the bud before it grows.
Which also means paying attention and get your nose out of your phone. So, all right. Well, that's it for us today. Busy, busy week. We've got another great week of shows planned for next week. Hopefully you guys, where you are, it's not that smoky. You can enjoy the weekend. I'm going to be doing some traveling and a family event. So have a great day. We will see you Monday.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.